This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Hey, Cousin Paul, you want to talk about wrestling?
I want to talk about many things, mostly not the pay-per-view that's coming up, but a little bit of that.
We'll have to touch on it. We have to give kind of our picks and everything. But
hey, you can't make me touch on anything.
That's fair enough. You're an adult human being. You make your own decisions.
No. We'll touch on that, which I did not know the card literally until Aaron sent all of his picks mocking the card.
Yeah, I like
Aaron
that.
Loves and hates wrestling more than anybody.
He does.
But only at the same time. He doesn't love it more than anybody. He doesn't hate it more than anybody. He does both at the same time more than anybody. But I want to talk about two things that also relate to what you want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about Royal Rumble 92 and Survivor Series 91.
Okay.
And for odd reasons. Okay. So where do you want to start?
I want to start with Bobby the Brain Heenan.
That's a good place to start.
Because it's a good segue. Bobby the Brain Heenan unfortunately passed away. And arguably he is like, when I was a kid, I remember as a small kid, I remember him being a manager on the tail end of his career and having the occasional match, but he always just got his ass whooped. But I primarily remember Bobby the Brain Heenan doing commentary or calling commentary with Gorilla Monsoon first on Primetime Wrestling, on the pay-per-views, and then later WCW. So to me, you know, the Brain, I've always loved the Brain for his quick wit, for his comedy, for everything. You know what I mean? Like, he was like the master of the zinger one-liner practice in wrestling for me. And probably his greatest ever commentary job was Royal Rumble 1992.
Yeah, he was great on that. I mean, he put over people you knew. Like, now you look at, you know, like Tito Santana comes out. Yep. And he's convincing you that Tito Santana can win that Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
When you know that by that point in his career, Tito Santana can't win anything.
Right. But mostly, my favorite part of it was his bias towards Ric Flair for the whole thing. And Gorilla Monsoon was like,
yeah.
You're supposed to be neutral. I can't be. You know, it's not fair to Flair. I mean, I loved it. Like, I love the part where, like, Flair's about to get eliminated and Roddy Piper saves him. And he's like, thank you, Piper. I can't believe I'm going to say, it's a kilt. It's not a skirt. It's a kilt. I'm so sorry. And then Piper turns and smacks Flair. And he's like, oh, you skirt-wearing freak. Why would you do that? Like, I just, you know... I loved it. It was phenomenal. And so Royal Rumble 92 is like one of my all-time favorite Royal Rumbles, mostly a lot because Ric Flair wins. But a lot of it is the Bobby Heenan commentary. And we'll talk about that more in a little bit because I know you want to talk about that pay-per-view.
Yeah, Flair on that. But remind me to talk a little bit about Flair on that pay-per-view because, you know, like, yeah. I don't hate Flair, yeah. But I'm not a big Flair fan.
Right.
But I think I might need to go back and do some watching.
Got to watch some old Flair stuff, dude. And, of course, I can tell you what to watch because I love the Nature Boy. So
yeah.
It's sad that we lost Heenan. And I don't know if many people realize this, but we have lost a lot of wrestlers this year. And we took a big hit at the beginning of the year. And the fact of the matter is, back in, like, February, I decided after we had – so many wrestlers that died straight away. I mean, you know, we had the lesser known, like Timothy Well died in January. He was one half of Well Done. But then in January, we had Superfly Jimmy Snuka, you know, and then we had Gorilla, George the Animal Steel, Chavo Guerrero Sr., Nicole Bass to a lesser extent, Ivan Koloff. I mean, in February alone, we had so many, like, legends of wrestling pass away. I decided, all right, I'm going to start keeping track, and I'm going to write a blog to come out in early 2018. Basically, it's just wrestlers who died in 2017. I cannot believe how many names I have on this list. It's surprising, you know, from wrestlers you hadn't heard about in years, like Outlaw Ron Bass passed away, or Dennis Stamp, who got repopularized after the documentary Beyond the Mat. And then we had some, you know, a few Mexican legends pass away in Fishman and El Canek. And then you had, like, Rosie passed away, you know, the old Matthew Onaway. Rosie from, you know, and just so many. You know, some independent stars you probably never heard of. Guys like, and then other guys like Pretty Boy Doug Summers, who was a phenomenal wrestler, but mostly just known for his AWA tag team run with Playboy Buddy Rose in their match with the Rockers. And, you know, all the way up now to Bobby the Brain Heenan, who passed away September 17th. Like, I don't think I'd realize that how many people, how many wrestlers, big names, small names, whatever, we lost this year without keeping track on this list. And by the way, I said El Canek, and I did not mean that name. I meant Grand Apache. So, but anyways, I don't know. Just throwing that out there, I guess.
So one of my first strong Bobby Heenan memories was in the early days of Monday Night Raw, which I guess looking back, because I watched Raw from the beginning up to a certain point on.
He was only on the first couple episodes.
Was it only the first couple episodes? I thought it was that.
He went to WCW really quick. He was really only on the first like few episodes, I thought.
Oh, well, it must have been then. Who was that obnoxious guy that they had on that was terrible? Rob Bartlett or something like that?
He was
like
only
that?
On the first episode, I think, and he was horrible.
I think it was more than the first episode, and I was kind of surprised by that because, like I said, I went back and watched from the first episode. But yeah, I think you're right. I think they had the whole Monsoon ousting Bobby Heenan pretty early.
I thought it was pretty quick right off. No, because Monday Night Raw started in January of 93, right? Yes. So, okay, he didn't leave the Federation until December 93, so I'm sorry. December 93 is when he got kicked out of the WWE.
I think what happened is he – so you know what I'm talking about, though, when Monsoon throws him out?
Yes, yes.
Was that when he left WWE or was that before? Okay.
That's when he left, and that was – right here, I found it, December 6, 1993.
That was a great bit, too. I mean, what a guy to put over the place you're leaving like that, you know? To allow yourself to leave on such a ridiculous note that just, you know, I mean, that's what made him so great is he did what was the best thing for entertainment. But anyways, he had a bit on Raw where he's interviewing a couple that either just got married or was about to get married.
Yes.
And he had the tissue, and he has the wife hold the tissue, and he screws up the guy's name. I forget what his last name was, but he calls him Todd Kabababoom.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, that whole bit was just great. And it was just so Bobby Heenan. That's one of the things I remember the best. I had watched wrestling before that.
Yep.
But it was – that was when I was really starting to get an understanding overall of what was going on instead of just, like, kind of continually randomly coming across stuff. That's when, like, it was coming together, and that's when – I remember like watching wrestling on a regular basis. Yeah, Heenan was just always so great. Going back and watching, though, that's what was great about the time I started watching is as I went backwards and watched, I had, you know, I mean, Bobby Heenan was involved in everything, and he was one of those guys that just like made everything. He was a constant thread through everything, and he was so good, and he made those around him good.
There were so many of those early pay-per-view shows where Bobby Heenan would be managing, like, they'd be 10 matches on the card, and he's out there for 5 or 6 of them managing guys. Or he's out there for a couple of the matches, but he's doing commentary the whole time except when he's managing. And yeah, you're right. I mean, he was all over those shows. Speaking of a Bobby Heenanism or whatever, I remember an old episode of Primetime Wrestling where they were like interviewing the audience for some reason, and they're and like Vince McMahon was like, "Oh, we have a couple celebrating their 20th wedding anniversary." And Bobby Heenan says to the guy, he was like, "Wait a second, so you've been married to her 20 years ago? You married her 20 years ago today, huh?" And the guy goes, "Yeah." And Heenan goes, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember exactly, but he goes, "Huh. You do realize if you would have murdered her on your honeymoon, you'd be getting out of prison now rather than being stuck in it for the rest of your life." And it was so inappropriate, but so funny. Yeah, it was just, you know, it was a Bobby the Heenanism. You know, it's just, yeah. I met him back in 2012, I went to my buddy Jay and I went down to New Jersey to a Pro Wrestling Syndicate's 5th anniversary event because I wanted to see the Great Muta. So we went down to meet the Great Muta and sat front row for the show and everything. And then the very next day, about a half hour away, in Rahway, New Jersey, they had Legends of the Ring, which is a one-day wrestling convention. And we went, and my buddy Jay, we went there, and Bobby Heenan was there doing signing. And I wanted to get a couple of trading cards signed by Heenan. I had a WWF one, and then I had a WCW one that had him and Larry Zbyszko on it. And I'd actually gotten Larry Zbyszko to sign it a couple months before when he was at, of all places, an independent show in Gray, Maine. And to me, it was really sad because of the cancer and because of having, like, a part of his, you know, he had that tongue cancer and he had a part of his like, kind of, like, jaw removed and this and that. He couldn't talk anymore, you know? And he didn't look like Bobby Heenan. And I had him sign my cards, but I didn't do a picture with him. Jay did. He was so excited, and I'm happy for him. And, you know, he seemed in great spirits, and he was, like, wicked nice, and he didn't say anything, but he, like, you know, he'd, like, give you a thumbs up or nod, or, you know what I mean? His eyes would light up while you were talking, whatever. So, like, he, you know, he was acknowledging what you were saying and everything like that. But it was just, like, I can't talk to him. You know what I mean? Like, he couldn't talk. It was, I don't know.
It's hard to see stuff like that. It's like, you know, going to visit an elderly relative that's, you know, living in an assisted care facility. Yeah. It's tough to see that stuff.
It is. And it's just – it has a lot to do with the fact that Bobby Heenan was so well known for his – for talking, for his quick wit, for his – you know what I mean? Like, he was so well known for that. It was just – yeah. It was a little tough. Anyhow, Survivor Series 1991. You say you'd want to talk about it.
So one thing I've been doing lately is when I just need to unwind, either I stay up later than everybody so I can just have some time to mentally let go.
Yep.
Or in this case, I had to be up at 4 for work, and yep. I got woken up early, and due to the nature of how I got woken up, I wasn't going to be able to just fall back asleep. So I just said, screw it. I got up. I got dressed. I had like an hour still before I had to leave for work or anything. So I was like, well, I'll put on wrestling. I'll set my alarm. And if I doze off, I doze off, you know? Mm-hmm. So I put on that Survivor Series. And the first match is, you know, a elimination match. And you have Bret Hart, Roddy Piper, the British Bulldog, and Virgil on one side against Million Dollar Man, Ric Flair, the Warlord, and the Mountie. Yep. Yeah. So I think the only elimination I saw was the Bulldog getting eliminated. I might have seen the Warlord getting eliminated before I dozed off. Then I had this crazy dream about the rest of the match, like just totally not what happened at all, just like dreamt it. And when the face team won, and when they won, all four guys were out there, and they all got presented with championship belts that were designed like in their character, but also ridiculously not in their character.
Yeah.
So like, for example, Bret Hart's belt had like, you know, the pink and black kind of stuff, but the design was like nothing that had to do with him. And they all went up to the different four corners of the ring and went up and they raised their belt. So then I woke up and I was like, what the hell just happened? And so I go back and watch the end of the match, and that was certainly not how the match ended. I think I actually finished watching it on a later day because I had to get ready or I had to leave for work when I woke up. But
well, it's funny because your comment about the match made me go back and watch it, and I was just like, first of all, I remember Ric Flair being the sole survivor. I didn't remember, you know, more than half.
Was the worst ending to Survivor Series.
It was horrible. Yeah. Like
that was it's like having a Royal Rumble where you have like 20 guys in the ring, and then all of a sudden 19 of them just jump out the ring for no reason. That's pretty much what it felt like.
Yeah, like you had all right. The Bulldog got eliminated when Flair pinned him, in like 11 minutes according to this, and then Roddy Piper pinned the Warlord after 17 minutes, and then like 5.5 minutes later, whatever. DiBiase, the Mountie, Roddy Piper, Bret Hart, and Virgil all got disqualified while brawling inside the ring. Like, five people got disqualified in one fell swoop, making Ric Flair the sole survivor.
Yeah, because, the funny thing is, you look at it, because the first thing I noticed...
It was a 23-minute match. That's how it ended. Like, that's how a four-minute match ends, you know?
And the ridiculous thing, like, is the... When I started watching at that point, because I was trying to figure out where the heck I left off, Bret Hart is in the corner getting attacked by three guys, and the Mountie is, like, dragging him from the outside of the ring. So Bret Hart is just, like, getting mauled. So, like, he had no reason to be disqualified, because he was getting, he had no choice. Like, he couldn't go back to his corner or anything. He was getting attacked. And let alone, like, attacked, he was getting, like, you know, cheap shot attacked all over the place.
Yeah.
But they disqualified him along with the three guys attacked. But I guess, what the hell? Like, Flair was attacking him too. Why the hell wasn't Flair disqualified? Like, Flair was literally over there attacking him too. I don't know what the hell
know.
The other guy.
Maybe,
it was all over the place. But it was
he
ridiculous.
Wasn't.
The referee was like, I'm disqualifying everybody but Flair, because Flair walked away like 1 second before I decided this.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was just like, okay, we're going to have Flair win his match, but we don't want him to actually beat anybody. Except Bulldog. That's okay.
Yeah. And he beats him with a double axe handle off the top rope. Instead of, anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else about the show you want to talk about?
I didn't really watch that much else of the show. I started watching the match after that, which I thought it was funny. This opening match is so full of talent.
Oh, God, yeah.
Even the smaller talents, like, have a lot to say for themselves. Like, Bulldog may not be the most talented wrestler, but... He's been in some
he's
great
still
matches.
He's the British Bulldog, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's an icon in wrestling,
yeah.
The Mountie may have been kind of a silly character, but, like, that guy was around forever. He was part of the Rougeaus, and then he went on to do that.
Hey, don't forget, in 1997, the Mountie pinned Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I saw that in a blog recently.
That
and then
was
he
my
was,
blog. We
part
can talk
of the
about it. It was my blog.
I know, I figured you'd pump yourself up
the
there.
The Wrestling Insomniac. Plug myself, not pump myself, thank you. Yeah, The Wrestling Insomniac, my latest blog post is about the time Jacques Rougeau pinned Hulk Hogan. And then also most recently talking about guys who wrestled at ECW that you may not have known.
That was actually your first blog post I ever looked at.
I know, you're my cousin. Legitimate family, by marriage, but who cares? Legitimate family. And that's the first blog post of 277 I fucking posted. That's the first one you've read. Hurts my feelings, Paul.
I talk to you too much.
Hurts my feelings.
Why do I need to read what you tell me?
Because I don't always verbally tell you what I've written about, Paul.
You tell me everything. You've literally told me everything there is to say about wrestling.
Oh, no, I haven't. I've told you a lot about wrestling. Not everything there is to say.
You want to hear something funny?
Of course.
Aaron didn't think I knew who John Laurinaitis was.
Oh, what?
He was explaining John Laurinaitis to me, because he mimicked the way that they mimic him on the Pritchard Show.
Oh God, yeah, yeah.
And then he's like, oh yeah, they do impressions of him a lot on the Pritchard Show, and I'm like, I know who he is. Like,
what were you guys recording a podcast?
No, this was just messaging, but. Yeah, I just thought it was pretty funny. Like, he'd
hey, Vince, your arms look really big. Pritchard Show, sometimes his impersonations drive me nuts because they're too much, and then other times I absolutely love them.
Yeah, so, they take it over the top sometimes, but you couldn't get out all the things that they do if you didn't allow it to go off the rails sometimes. So.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You got to just run with it. But, I just thought that was funny, seeing as, like, when I got back into wrestling, it was – I think that was right when he was a – I mean, it was a little bit before, but, like, it wasn't long after that he was a major part of the angle of everything for quite a while. But, I mean, how would Aaron know that, I guess? It's not like Aaron and I have talked current wrestling very much.
Very true.
It's true. I mean, except for, like, current, but not, like, the last few years. I mean, it's like I didn't know that Ronnie didn't give a shit about Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, it seems wrong, like, right?
That's okay. Yeah. He, if you can be a loud ass on the mic, Ronnie loves you, but if you can wrestle really well,
Phenomenal. So, but we chatted about Survivor Series because you were asking me, like, because you actually watched Royal Rumble 92 first, and you asked how the title got held up, and I told you about Survivor Series 91.
That's why I went back.
And that's why I went back and watched. All right, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Did you watch this Tuesday in Texas?
No, I did not watch that yet, but I in the past I knew all that stuff, so I kind of had, like, I remembered this Tuesday in Texas. I just couldn't remember all the details. Yeah. Plus, I knew, like, one thing that's nice about talking to somebody who watched it when it was happening is you get the details you can't get from looking stuff up. Yeah. Or from watching pay-per-views. That in-between stuff, like, what was it like having Flair come in? Like, what did it feel like as a fan? Like, what was the sense around it? That kind of stuff. So I was able to get that kind of context.
Well, like, for me, if you want to know my part of it, for me, like, watching the show, I remember, like, I watched WCW, NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions, whatever. I watched everything wrestling when I was a kid that I could find. But, you know, obviously I watched Saturday, WCW Saturday Night every week and Main Event Worldwide. And I watched Raw, and I watched Primetime Wrestling, that is, Superstars of Wrestling. I did not get Wrestling Challenge in my area. But I did get All American Wrestling and then later the Action Zone and all those shows and whatnot. So when Bobby the Brain Heenan on Primetime Wrestling, like, came, when they came back and there's Heenan standing there and he's holding what I know to be the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship in his hands, I was like, holy shit. Like, this is big. This is huge. This isn't right. Like, that belt doesn't belong on this TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's got to be pretty shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I was 12 at the time, and I just knew, like, that belt doesn't belong on this TV. I know. I read Pro Wrestling Illustrated. That's, you know, the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, and we always talk about fantasy matches, but that belt doesn't belong on this TV. This is crazy. And It was huge. And then when he actually said Ric Flair's name at the end of the promo, it was like, oh my God. And then the weeks leading up to it, you had Bobby Heenan talking to a figure behind a door that said Hulk Hogan on it. So he's allegedly talking to Hogan, and Hogan slams the door in his face. And then finally, when Ric Flair makes his debut, you know, it's on Primetime Wrestling. And he comes out, and he's got the robe, and he cuts a promo, and it was awesome. But the promo that did it for me is on the Brother Love Show, when Hogan's a guest on the Brother Love Show and Flair comes out. And I just remember it, like, Flair coming out, he's got Heenan with him, Heenan's holding the belt, Hogan's got, you know, he was grumbling, you know, he's all grumbling, and when Ric Flair says, he goes, Hogan, big man, I've been waiting years to talk to you. And it was just like, holy shit. And he just cut this wicked promo on Hogan and about being how he's the real world's champion, and what he's got and what Hogan's got strapped around his waist is like a tinker toy, basically, and on and on and on. I mean, it was awesome. And then we never got the match.
I can't believe they would have all that opportunity right in front of them, and they just how do you not get a match out of that? How do you not get that done?
Well, they kind of did have a match in respect to house shows. They wrestled on house shows. Nothing was televised. Years later, like, I caught, like, they had released them somehow, like, maybe it was on the MSG network type of thing, but, like, we never got a pay-per-view match out of it. And right there, especially after Royal Rumble 92, staring right in front of you or staring right in your face, you have what should be, you know, a pay-per-view match of Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania.
That should have been the WrestleMania main event, yeah. And what was the WrestleMania main event that year?
Hulk Hogan versus Sid. And earlier in the card,
for nothing?
Yeah, exactly. And earlier in the card, Ric Flair wrestled Randy Savage for the belt. So, yeah.
See, that was probably a good match.
It was, you know what, actually, it was okay. It was okay. But anyhow, yeah, so I just knew when Flair came in the WWE, it was a big thing, especially seeing how he brought that belt with him. It was an awesome experience for me as a kid, as a fan. It was the first time I felt like I was watching something going, whoa, this shouldn't be happening, you know? Mm-hmm. So what inspired you to watch Rumble 92?
Just looking for something to watch, and typically the things all I'll get drawn to are, you know, it used to, like, some of my favorite things used to be the Royal Rumbles and the Survivor Series matches, because they, I mean, first of all, back then, gimmicks weren't overdone. Gimmick matches, you know, it's like matches were typically just straight matches. You had regular matches, you had tag team matches. Sometimes you had six-man tag team matches. I always thought six-man tag team matches were kind of boring back in the day. Too many people. But, yeah, so Survivor Series matches, they don't do it for me as much anymore, because now watching, I could see how, like, they are just as shitty gimmicky as a lot of the stuff they do nowadays with how they – I mean, we just talked about, you know, in 92 – that match where they have so much great talent, and you never see anything very good in that match. And then you have this stupid ending to the match, and you had so much potential in that match, you know? So Royal Rumbles are ones where it's just fun. Like, you can't not enjoy watching a Royal Rumble, unless it's a couple of the ones in the last few years. But that's another story. Even then, they're still kind of fun.
See, for me... I still like the Survivor Series. Yes, I know that you have at least one match where it's just completely stupid and the booking doesn't make any sense. But at the same time, they have some other matches that are just pretty phenomenal or really, really good. And I honestly, with the number of pay-per-views we have nowadays this year and everything else, I think they should go back to the Survivor Series being... Teams of five will survive, and doing just 5-on-5 the whole card. They could extend storylines that way. Yeah, they could extend storylines that way. It'll make the pay-per-view different and special compared to everything else. Because realistically, like, we have No Mercy coming up this Sunday, and we have Survivor Series. And legitimately, other than the name, the shows are interchangeable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's been a big, like, part of the problem is, I mean, the shows are interchangeable with, like, just freaking episodes of Raw if you cut out all the promo time.
Yep. Like, I actually legitimately hate the fact that we have a Hell in the Cell pay-per-view, because that match should just happen because it's happened, because it's a culmination of a feud. It shouldn't happen because we have a pay-per-view named by it, and so we have to
find
the
a way to fill it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just like the TLC pay-per-view, just like... Well, Money in the Bank's different. That one's okay because it's like the Royal Rumble, where that's the feature match, is the Money in the Bank match.
Yeah, I agree with that. TLC, I'm sort of okay with, because it's basically a card where they're saying these are all going to be stipulation matches.
Well, but no, see, that's the thing, though. You shouldn't just have a show with, like... TLC and Extreme Rules are basically the same type of pay-per-view. It's a card full of matches that have stipulations. However, a good feud culminates to a match where they go, we're going to settle this in a TLC match. And not just because, oh, hey, it's, you know, it's December, because that's when it historically was. I think they moved it. But hey, it's December. It's time to have the TLC pay-per-view, so who's going to be in the TLC match?
That's the problem with 12 pay-per-views a month. And I mean, if they were doing it to make it good quality wrestling for the fans that want to watch good quality wrestling, then it would be – I mean, it'd be a little bit more like it was back in the day, where you had the major pay-per-views you had in your house in the months in between that were 2 hours long at that time. And you typically saw more of – you may see, you know, people in the same realm of the feuds that were going on, but, you know, like – I mean, Shawn Michaels wrestled some guys you wouldn't see him wrestle when he was champion.
His match with Mankind was phenomenal.
Exactly.
And
yeah, so I
mean, don't
that's
think
what they should do is they should have championship defenses against guys that you wouldn't see normally built up for the big pay-per-views.
Yep.
And then the other ones, you know, I mean, basically kind of what they're doing. Well, the problem with what they're doing now is, like, how many times did we see Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton wrestle in stupid-ass matches?
Yep.
And over the course of several pay-per-views, they could have had them in different – I mean, still kind of program them together, but have, you know, tag team matches or six-man matches. I mean, they kind of do that stuff sometimes, but they also do the stuff where it's just like lazy programming. Let's just have them do the same thing but throw weird shit in there. And it gets really old. So that's there's a lot that I think they could go back to basics with – and make stuff better than it is. But ultimately, the reason it is what it is right now is because, you know, the people that are spending money want to see the people they want to see, you know, and so they just keep on throwing those people out there. I mean, it doesn't matter how old you know, Cena and Orton and a bunch of other guys get. Mm-hmm. Man, Orton comes out there after doing not a damn thing against a guy who is hot. He hits an RKO and everybody pops for Orton.
Yep.
That's just how it is. And that's, yeah. You know, it's too bad when you want to like actually see stuff be interesting and different and compelling. But
I kind of wish, like, okay, when you have WrestleMania, it's WrestleMania. When you have SummerSlam, it's SummerSlam. You know, it's just those are two big shows in the year. Royal Rumble, obviously the Royal Rumble match is going to happen. I agree with that. Elimination Chamber. Now, that's a pay-per-view where it's a match where, like, unlike Hell in a Cell, where they go, oh, who are we going to put in the Hell in the Cell? We'll plug these two people in it. No, that a feud's supposed to culminate to a Hell in a Cell, not just happen because the pay-per-view comes around. But Elimination Chamber, that's different to me because that's, you know, that's like a Royal Rumble, like a Money in the Bank. You know what I mean? That's a special type of match, and the winner – oops, didn't know my sound was on. Sorry. but that the winner of that gets a title shot or whatever. You know what I mean? So that I'm okay with a pay-per-view like that. But TLC, Extreme Rules, Hell in the Cell, I hate them. What they need to bring back, King of the Ring.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
If you're going to have 15 pay-per-views in a year, one of them should be King of the Ring. And have it be a 8-man tournament, if that's what you want. 4 guys from Raw, 4 guys from SmackDown. Now you're going to see some matches you may not see otherwise because their guys are from two different brands, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, you can have qualifying matches for the King of the Ring either at the other pay-per-views, you know, the Raw and SmackDown only pay-per-views, or on Raw and SmackDown themselves. So that's how you can kind of build it more. And now they've earned the right into the King of the Ring. And just have the only thing on the show is the King of the Ring tournament. So even if it's just a 2-hour pay-per-view that's an 8-man tournament, you're looking at 7 matches on that card. And maybe in between the rounds you could have like a tag team match or something. You know what I mean? To like space it out. Like you could have the first 2 rounds, have a tag team match, and then
back in the day they would have the tournament and they would usually have the championship match and then maybe like 1 or 2 other matches, like maybe an Intercontinental Championship match. Obviously they have too many titles. You don't want them getting on there defending all the titles.
Exactly. But you could have other matches.
The smaller titles, you know. I mean, if you don't want to put one champion over the other in an pay-per-view.
Inter-promotional,
that's what I'm looking for. Then have the tournament and have the U.S. Championship featured and have the IC Championship featured.
Yep.
Build those up. Make them the, you know, like kind of the co-main event with the final of the tournament. Yeah. You know, the final of the tournament.
And the winner of the tournament gets a title shot on the respective brand of show that they're on. So if they're a SmackDown wrestler, you know, they get a WWE title shot. If they're a Raw wrestler, they get a Universal title shot. But, you know, bring back King of the Ring. You know, like that would be – I would enjoy that. I would enjoy if they did something like that, you know.
And you could make it the reverse of Money in the Bank where the champion gets screwed and have it they win the title shot, but then the champion comes running out right then and stomps the shit out of him.
Imagine that.
You win the King of the Ring and Brock Lesnar comes out to defend his title against you right then.
Oh, jeez, I'm crow, yeah. That would be a TNA concept, though. You know what I mean? Instead of having where the challenger gets to cash whenever he wants. No, the champion gets to cash in, and the guy has to face him in his title match. This is your title opportunity, you know. In
6 hexagonal rings, side by side. You have to get a pinfall in every ring.
I mean, you know, TNA, home of the reverse battle royal, where, you know, you have to be thrown in the ring to be eliminated. Oh, shit. Speaking of returns, did you see that WWE is bringing Starrcade back?
I did. And see, that's one thing I think that they should do more of is just bring back the names of the old WCW pay-per-views.
Well, as long as they're doing it right. Like, they brought back the Great American Bash, and they did that in the summer for a few years, and now that has since gone away. And they've brought out – they haven't brought – instead of calling it Night of Champions, it's called Clash of Champions.
Mm-hmm.
And TNA and NWA had Clash of the Champions as like their It's kind of like their version of Saturday Night's Main Event. It was their live special on TBS 3-4 times a year, but it was in prime time, unlike Saturday Night's Main Event, which was on at 11:30 at night. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. Clash of the Champions was live as opposed to Saturday Night Live, which was, I mean, Saturday Night's Main Event, which was pre-taped. But this is not a pay-per-view. It's right now, it's a house show, and I don't know if it's going to be broadcast on the WWE Network or not. And that kind of pisses me off. Because it's like, they're bringing back Starrcade, the first ever wrestling supercard that was featured on closed-circuit television and everything, and is kind of considered the first pay-per-view, is Starrcade. It was before WrestleMania. The first actual pay-per-view, by the way, was the Wrestling Classic, which was a tournament that WWF did to, you know, try out pay-per-view and how it would work. WrestleMania 2 was their first pay-per-view that they did, the first WrestleMania that was on pay-per-view. Starrcade 87 was the very first NWA pay-per-view, actually. That was on, otherwise they were just closed-circuit television. Just a little history lesson for you. Sorry. Anyway, so Starrcade is going to be back at the Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is the home where it belongs, November the 25th, 2017. It's a Saturday night. It's a SmackDown brand house show. But that's all it is right now, is a house show. They haven't announced if they're going to have it on the network, and I hope it's on the network.
Yeah, me too. They have so much stuff that they could do like that would be, you know... When you own so much, is like, why not formulate in? You're adding so much programming. Why not formulate some stuff that is going to be more appeasing to the fans that have been watching forever? And you know, I mean, how much have they over the years like brought in these, you know, old time wrestlers that can hardly do anything anymore, but they bring them in to just show them off and get them involved in stuff? You know, why not take the format and the names of some of these old pay per views and do it right? And do it with some of the smaller guys that aren't getting show anywhere else.
And you know, honestly, you know, they're doing it right after Thanksgiving. Starrcade historically started on Thanksgiving. That's why the Survivor Series was created, by the way, as to be direct competition with Starrcade. And then after Starrcade 87, they moved Starrcade to December, but they're bringing it back in November. Again, it's a Saturday night. They've already announced the card. You know, you got Breezango against Aiden English and Mike Kanellis in a tag match. You got Bobby Roode against Dolph Ziggler. Sami Zayn against Kevin Owens. The New Day against The Usos. AJ Styles versus Baron Corbin versus Rusev, advertised as a U.S. title match. Natalya versus Charlotte Flair in a steel cage for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And Jinder Mahal versus Shinsuke Nakamura in a steel cage for the WWE Championship. It's a good card. Like... I don't know what the next SmackDown pay-per-view is. I can't think of it off the top of my head. This seems like a better show.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, the next SmackDown pay-per-view is Hell in a Cell. And all they've announced so far is Jinder Mahal against Shinsuke Nakamura in a singles match. Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens in Hell in a Cell. The New Day's against The Usos. And Natalya versus Charlotte Flair. You know, and this is going to be in Detroit, Michigan on October 8th. You know, a whole almost 2 months before the Starrcade event. I mean, we still have, like, after that pay-per-view, we still have TLC, which is a Raw-only pay-per-view. And, excuse me, yeah, it's a Raw-only pay-per-view. And this is going to be in October 22nd. And then we have Survivor Series, and then now the Starrcade event, and the next pay-per-view after Survivor Series, I'm aware of, I believe it's Clash of Champions. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyhow, might as well talk about No Mercy while we're on the subject. How'd that be?
Now that we're all depressed, let's talk about No Mercy.
Well, I'm not depressed, per se.
Because it's having no mercy on us, that's for sure.
So, anywho, here we go. The Miz defending the Intercontinental Championship against Jason Jordan. Aaron wrote, Jordan over the Miz. Miz is the best thing happening on Raw, but they're pushing Jordan with the angle storyline, so I don't see him. So I see him getting a taste of the gold. I'm hoping the Miz retains, but I feel like he's right. Jason Jordan's going to win on this one.
How did they make me not care about Jason Jordan? I really liked Jason Jordan.
Because they broke up American Alpha and then made him Kurt Angle's illegitimate son, and there you go.
Yeah, you remember when American Alpha was awesome and they beat the Revival for the championship?
And that the series of matches that American Alpha had with the Revival were phenomenal, yes.
Yeah. The ending of that match was great, where Jason Jordan gets tagged in, and instead of just jumping in the ring, he jumps off the ring, goes around to the other side, and comes in from behind the guy because he didn't see the tag.
Yep.
So they outmaneuvered the cheating heel.
Yes, cheating. Absolutely. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, sir. That was awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this match. They have Miz win matches he shouldn't win. They have him lose matches he should win. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but I guess logically, the way they've been, and really, I think that this is a good example of where it's kind of lame that they make us have to think so logically about who we think is going to win.
Yep.
Instead of just getting into the storyline. This is a good example of how it takes the fun out of it, in a way, when we're like, well, logically,
Yeah.
We're explaining why we don't care, basically.
Alexa Bliss defends her Raw Women's Championship at a Fatal 5-Way against Sasha Banks, Bayley, Nia Jax, and Emma. Aaron says, somehow Alexa Bliss retains the women's title. Yeah, I see Bliss retaining the title as well.
You know why they do this match? So they could have Nia Jax lose without making her look beatable,
Yep. Even
though she can't wrestle. And they don't want her to beat anybody because they don't want her to actually hold the title.
Yep. Yeah, I can agree with that one.
I can't. If they wanted to move the title to somebody else, I don't think they would do it in a big match like this. I mean, Alexa Bliss has lost the title to other people, and it's always been in, just one-on-one matches. And I believe it has. But she's won the title many times by surviving those clusterfuck matches, which is exactly what this is.
Neville defends the Cruiserweight Championship against Enzo Amore. I cannot tell you how little I care about Enzo Amore. I can't. I feel like Neville's going to win. Aaron has that Neville's going to win because Enzo can't wrestle. So.
Do you know what my first memory of NXT was?
What?
You showing me Enzo and Cass coming out in that one pay-per-view where they got the biggest pop.
It actually wasn't even a pay-per-view. It was the first NXT Brooklyn Takeover special they did. They taped some matches for that Wednesday's episode of NXT, and that's what that was. This was just a weekly episode of NXT, and matches were taped before Takeover.
Oh, okay.
And that is still one of the biggest pops I had heard in a long time. When their music kicked on, that place went friggin' nuts. At that time, Enzo wasn't as annoying as he is now, and him and Cass were over huge. But Enzo on his own, one of the big things that Cass said is, Enzo, you talk too much. And he does, yeah.
Yeah, they gave him way too much mic time when they put him up in the main roster. He was entertaining, but you cannot give him that much time.
And that's just like on NXT, it was like he got just enough mic time, and then they take it away.
You got to limit it. Oh, my God. They would let him talk and talk and talk, and everything he did just got obnoxious when he got too much time for it.
Yep.
But it's just like Deadpool or like Old Dirty Bastard. They're good in small doses.
Yep.
But they got to be the flavor and the bigger thing, not, it's like you don't eat a bowl of ketchup.
Yeah.
The way they've put Neville over too, like I can't see them having him go in and lose to Enzo. Like they've really been putting Neville over. And I gotta say, as far as the 205 Live guys, like Neville when he came back and was vicious, like he impresses me.
Yep.
So I mean I don't mind the only time that I wanted to see Neville lose it really was with Austin Aries.
Me too.
Instead, Neville broke him and ended his WWE career, basically, because he could never kind of get over that injury he got.
Yeah. And then
Neville, though. That was actually the injury he got from Shinsuke, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
That was too bad. I mean, he got injured by Shinsuke, and then just, like, that injury just... I mean, it just goes to show that, like, the... the workload that they have to do can be too much. You know, he should have been off and healing instead of staying in the midst of stuff, but...
Well, it has a lot to do with the didn't want to lose my spot.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? It's the way it is. Like, even if they would have made him take the time off to heal, you know, his character would have cooled.
Yeah, probably. I mean, because Austin Aries and Neville had some really great matches, you know, for the belt, and more than once I thought Austin Aries was gonna get the win, but he didn't. And essentially, you know, Aries, like, he hasn't had a match since he left WWE, which was in July. Like, his last match was July 1st in a triple threat match in Tokyo with Akira Tozawa and Neville. And he hasn't had a match since then. And, like, I thought for sure, like, when he left, like, all right, we're going to see him on the indies somewhere because his stock is up a little bit. But no, nothing.
Maybe he's really healing up.
Oh, maybe. I mean, you know, from 2016 to 2017, he did have that 5 months off. After the match, or was it the tag match, him and Austin Aries against No Way Jose and Shinsuke at NXT. You know, and that's where he got that injury. And, you know, 5 months later, he did some TV stuff. And then 5 months later, you know, he comes back on, you know, as on 205 Live. And, yeah, so. But anyhow, I feel like Neville's going to retain the belt in this match as well.
Yeah.
Finn Balor against Bray Wyatt. And this is part of the booking where I don't understand, where things have to build to something. It started with Balor being the demon against Bray Wyatt and winning the match. And, like, at that point, it should be over. But no, the feud's continuing, and now he's just wrestling as Finn Balor. And it's like, well, who gives a shit? Should they have had the match with him as Finn Balor first and then have a match with him as the demon? But whatever. Aaron's got that Bray Wyatt's going to beat Balor because Balor won the feud at the last pay-per-view, and somehow it's still going on. And, yeah, I'm going to agree with that, or unless Dustin Rhodes interferes and causes Wyatt to lose. Or more likely, Dustin Rhodes will interfere.
So Goldust is now just Dustin Rhodes?
Well, okay, a couple weeks ago on Raw, Bray Wyatt and Goldust had a match. And they used Goldust as symbolism for Finn Balor, showing that, you know, it's just paint. You're still the same man underneath. Basically by saying, you know, the demon isn't anything more than what Finn Balor is, type of thing. Mm-hmm. To downplay that, you know, the demon is just Finn Balor with paint on and acting funny. So, storyline-wise, Bray Wyatt wiped the paint off Goldust's face to reveal that the man underneath was still just... underneath it was just a man, and he was the same man he was, and blah, 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 whatever. And he beat Goldust. And then the next week on Raw, this past week, Goldust Bray Wyatt and Goldust had a return match, but he came out without any face paint on, but he had his Goldust gear on, and the commentators were referring to him as Dustin, and talking about Dustin Rhodes and how in WCW he was the natural and this and that. So I'm wondering if they're leading an angle towards that he's going to become, you know, like the natural Dustin Rhodes again in WWE though, and not wrestling as Goldust anymore. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But there's a part of me that feels like, you know, I could totally see Dustin Rhodes coming out as Dustin Rhodes, but now he's a member of the Wyatt family for whatever reason, because they do stupid shit like that.
Yeah, this is, you know. I really like Bray Wyatt. I really like Finn Balor.
Yeah.
And how do they make me get to the point where I don't care about them having a match together?
Yeah, it's a good question.
This whole pay-per-view just feels like that to me. Like, and before the last, like, 6 months, I would have said, you know what, it doesn't matter because they're having a match together and they're going to put on a good match.
Yep.
But the one thing I've learned over the 6 months is you can't trust that anymore.
Yeah, you can't.
That's disappointing.
All right, moving on. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins defending the tag team titles against Cesaro and Sheamus. And Aaron's got Ambrose and Rollins retaining because who gives a shit? And I don't know. I feel like in the same boat. This past week you have the thing where the good brothers come out and they call Ambrose and Rollins nerds, and Dean Ambrose loses his mind screaming, "Don't call me a nerd," and then there's a big scuffle, and it's just like, what?
Who are the good brothers?
The club.
Okay.
Yeah, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, they call each other good brother. So.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I could see Cesaro and Sheamus winning this because I can't see them wanting to keep Ambrose and Rollins as a tag team for much longer because, you know, WWE wants single stars, and both of these guys are single stars. They're just trying to take them – they, you know, they were taking them away from the spotlight they were getting. So I could see Cesaro and Sheamus winning this because I don't think that they're in that spot to get – the single pushes, but you know, Ambrose and Rollins, you could split them back up and have them do separate things without it just having to be in the championship picture.
Yep. I kind of feel like that Rollins and Ambrose are going to retain. I see them keeping the belts a little bit longer, but John Cena against Roman Reigns.
I think this match could actually end up being a good match.
This is the match that they've been that was talked about. Oh, this is going to happen at WrestleMania next year. You know, like that. This is the predicted main event for Mania was going to be these guys wrestling each other, and then now they're wrestling here. I don't know why they've sped it up. I don't know if they're changing plans for Reigns. I don't know if Cena's not going to be around for much longer, or he's going to be taking more time off, or whatever. But this match, I think, is going to surprise people. I think it's. I feel like it's going to surprise even me and be a lot better than I think it's going to be.
Yeah, Cena has very much so has the ability to put on a good match. I mean, I think you and I both know, and a lot of people know, that he gets a lot of criticism for his performance that is unjustified.
Yep.
Like, he can go in and put in really – he phones it in sometimes too, but at least when he phones it in, like – he's still doing decent, unlike, you know, you compare him to some other people, like one of the guys in the last match that doesn't even phone it in. It just
Dean Ambrose, lazy fuck. Yeah.
Terrible. You know, John Cena, even when he phones it in,
yeah,
it's still like, if you're a kid watching that, you think it's the greatest thing ever because he still does it good enough, you know?
Yep.
And I can't see him not pushing Reigns to be his best, like behind the scenes too. You know, Reigns has been somebody who's been built up to be, to be that next guy like Cena, whether, you know, we say it's being shoved down our throats or whatever. And you've heard so many different people in wrestling say that Reigns gets unjustified criticism too.
Yep.
Watching him, sometimes I think he's put on good shows and people still give him shit. And I've seen him put on a lot of really bad matches, too, that I think that he has no reason to put on matches bad like that. But
I think
I could see this being one of the best things he does.
I think they just need to make Roman Reigns a heel.
You can't just not care if you're a good guy. That's the thing. You can't just be apathetic. And that's how they play him. Like, I'm just too cool. I don't care. That's a heel.
Yeah, I think he needs to be heel because I'll say this. Back in the old Florida Championship Wrestling days and early NXT, if you watch Roman Reigns as just Roman Reigns, who was a cocky, arrogant heel, he did a great job. And get rid of the ooh-ah crap he does before he spears someone because, you know, when you do it once in a match, cool. But when you do it every single time you're going to spear someone, it's like just – fucking hit the move or cocking his fist. Oh, for the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyhow, Brock Lesnar against Braun Strowman. I'm actually excited for this match. I don't know who's going to win. I don't frankly care who wins. I just want to see these two big hosses beat the fuck out of each other.
Yeah. I mean, Strowman looks like he could take it and like he can give it. And I mean, we obviously know Lesnar could take it and give it. One of the things that's really impressed me about Lesnar because Lesnar totally fell in that phase where I didn't watch wrestling at all.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he returned after I had started watching and had been watching again for a while. But like his, you know, the pinnacle of his early career, I didn't watch anything then. He's like Kurt Angle, didn't watch a damn bit of it.
Oh, dude, you need to go watch back in 2002.
Is it the Angle Lesnar match you're talking about?
Nope. back in 2002, different. Hell in a Cell, Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker.
Hmm.
Yeah, great match. Absolutely phenomenal match between those two. It was a Hell in a Cell match. I can't remember what pay-per-view it's on off the top of my head, but I know it was in 2002. It was in October, I believe. Probably was No Mercy then, actually. Because that seems about the right time.
The Kurt Angle Brock Lesnar match, which was that a WrestleMania match? The one where Lesnar did the shooting star press and landed on his head?
That was WrestleMania 19, yes.
Yeah. So that was I think that was one of the first things I really saw of Lesnar, because I had been buying they were doing those WrestleMania box sets where it's like five WrestleManias packaged together.
Yeah.
And so I was getting my hands on those and watching. And that was one of the first things I saw with Lesnar, and that match really impressed me, both of the guys. But this match I'm looking forward to too, because you know, like the two matches that are the easiest ones to discard if you're you know, a bitter wrestling fan, I think are the two ones that actually could be pretty darn good. And really, you know, you look at some of the other ones, and like the Wyatt and Balor one, if they're actually given a chance to wrestle, that could be a good match.
Yep.
You know, I like the way both of those guys perform.
You know, I work a double this Sunday, so I'm going to watch it on the network. Probably I'll start around 1 in the morning to help me get me through that Sunday night to Monday morning. And I'm keeping an open mind and just hoping for a good, you know, 3-hour wrestling show. And,
Yeah, I would be happy because I feel like they try different things. Like, you know, any company that's trying to present a product, they'll try different things. And sometimes what they do gets in a direction, but then they look at it and don't really like the way it's going, and then they adjust, you know? I mean, I felt that way with a certain comic publisher recently that I'm a big fan of. And, you know, you look at the track of what WWE was doing for quite a while, and I feel like they gave Triple H's vision a lot of play. And then I feel like after a while they – you know, went back to kind of, no, we need to get back to this is how we do things. But
yep.
I mean, the guy who's saying this is how we do things behind the scenes is getting pretty damn old.
Yep.
You know, how much is he really, I mean, how much is he in touch with stuff, but also like how much does he really get what's going on anymore?
Right. Yeah. So. I get what you're saying. And by the way, it was No Mercy 2002. Where Brock Lesnar wrestled The Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match for the WWE Championship.
All right, I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, but listen to the rest of the card real quick. Chris Jericho and Christian, the tag team champions, against Booker T and Goldust. Torrie Wilson against Dawn Marie. I mean, who cares, but probably you'll see ass cheeks, and that's cool. Rob Van Dam versus Ric Flair. Jamie Noble, the Cruiserweight champion, against Tajiri. Triple H wrestling Kane in a unification match of the World's Heavyweight Championship and the Intercontinental Championship.
That makes
Go ahead.
Unifying those, that does make sense.
They unified them and they did away with the IC title for a time.
Wow, I'm surprised by that. I never knew that.
You didn't know that? Oh, well, it was during the time when you weren't watching wrestling. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, no wonder I wasn't watching. They do shit like that.
Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit against Edge and Rey Mysterio in the finals for the inaugural WWE Tag Team Championship. So you had the World Tag Team title was like on Raw, and then the WWE Tag Team Championship was on SmackDown. And here's what's stupid. When they unified these titles, the World Tag Team Championship and the WWE Tag Team Championship, they discontinued when they unified them, they then retired the World Tag Team titles. So the tag titles with the longer lineage were retired, quote unquote. And the current titles we have now that the New Day just had a record run with, they're not the same belts that Demolition had their record run with. So technically, Demolition is still the longest reigning WWE World Tag Team Champions. And that the New Day is the longest reigning WWE Tag Team Champions.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that out there. Trish Stratus against Victoria in the singles match for the Women's Championship. And then, like I said, that Hell in the Cell main event.
Nice. It's good stuff on there.
Yeah, and actually, there's a few good matches on there. But yeah, back in 2002, they apparently felt, oh, we have too many titles. So we're too many singles titles. So they actually unified the Intercontinental Championship in with the World's Heavyweight Championship. But prior to that, they unified the United States Championship and the Intercontinental Championship, and then they unified the Hardcore Championship into the Intercontinental Championship to do away with that. And then, like, you know, they unified the Intercontinental Championship with the World's Heavyweight Championship. But they brought back the Intercontinental title May of 2003. So they discontinued, they retired it in October 2002. They brought it back May 2003. So
that's just a whole bunch of dumb.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for joining me today, Paul. I appreciate it.
This is fun.
Yeah. And, I'm at Superstar ML on the Twitter. Aaron's at Aaron S. Bell. Ronnie is at Rumbar316. Paul, you're at Who's Paul? And then the show is on the Facebook at Podcast of 1,000 Holds. And it's on the Twitter at 1,000 Holds Pod or 1,000 Pods Hold. Or I don't know. You'll find it. So thanks.